Good morning. Good morning, everybody. Good morning, everybody. You are in the Los Angeles room where a panel will begin in a few moments. Before we begin, will you please take a moment to silence all electronic devices? Thank you. Welcome to the 54th birthday party of Overeaters Anonymous. My name is Morley. I am a compulsive overeater and your moderator for this panel.
Hi, Morley.
Once again, if you haven't done so already, please silence your electronic devices. Please join me in the serenity prayer. God, grant me the serenity to accept the things I cannot change, the courage to change the things I can, and the wisdom to know the difference. In keeping with the birthday party theme of higher powers, the topic of this panel is, At Long Last, I Saw, I Felt, I Believed, A New World Came Into View. Our speakers today are Marcy, David, and Katie B. Each will share their experience, strength, and hope for 12 minutes. After the speakers have shared, we will have 15 minutes for questions. A basket will circulate around the room while the speakers are sharing. If you wish to ask a question, write it down and drop it into the basket. We will do our best to get through as many questions as possible. If you would like to direct your question to a specific speaker, please write the name along with your question. You will find paper and pencils in the basket that is being circulated. Our first speaker this morning is Marcy.
Hi, I'm Marcy. I forgot to stand up for the tape. Hi, I'm Marcy. I'm a grateful compulsive overeater. And of course, in my mind, I'm like, oh, I don't want to be first. I'm nervous. And, you know, it's always all about me, you know. And I often say I may not be much, but I'm all that I think about. That's the reality. And without a higher power, I would truly be lost. So I really like the topic, but I was thinking about it when I heard Morley say it just now, and for me it really is this ongoing process. So I am seeing present tense, you know, or for grammaticians, I'm sure there's more complicated way to say it, but I'm seeing, I'm feeling, and I am in the process of believing. And for me, this program is all about that. It's all about spiritual growth. It's all about progress, not perfection. It's all about getting closer and closer every day to the person that I believe my higher power intends for me to be. And that is such a work in progress, such an ongoing process for me, that I don't know if I'll ever be able to get to the place where I can say, like, I see it now, you know, I've got it, I've got this thing. It's not that for me. So I'll get part of the numbers and qualifying stuff out of the way. I don't know why I'm so nervous, but I am. I've been in program 11 years, and I guess it's 6 months. I became abstinent May 1st, 2001. So it's 2002. Thank you, Ellie. I'm really... Actually, anyway, I'm abstaining 11 years and several months. I'm not ever good on math, so unless I write it down, I never know exactly where I'm at. But my abstinence date is May 1st, 2002, and by the grace of God, I have been maintaining 100-pound weight loss for over 10 years. I always have to, rigorous honesty, I do not know my top weight. I was not a person who got on the scale before program. I was a person who really was pretty disconnected from the head down. You know, I'd look in the mirror and make sure my hair was reasonably decent and my face was washed or whatever. But from the neck down, I really was not very much in touch with how much I weighed or what my body looked like. And that's challenging even today. Like sometimes I still have the 100-pounder thing today, where I think I'll never fit in that elevator, or I'll never fit in that chair, or those pants are going to be way too small. When I came in here, I was wearing size 26 jeans, and for the last 10 years, I wear size 8. And every time I buy a new pair of jeans, I pick up like 14s and 16s and 18s, and I think that they are my size. So it's like this disconnect, this dysmorphia that I still have, that I'm a big girl. I didn't get here till I was, in my 40s. And so I lived a long time in the disease of compulsive overeating. And that's why I say I don't really know my top weight. I say it's around 250 pounds, but it's probably higher than that. There's a long-timer in program. I haven't seen her this weekend, but there's a long-timer in program. And when I show my pictures, she said, "Honey, I know 250, and that's 300. So, you know, I don't know. I don't know. But, you know, I know factually how much I weigh today. And, you know, I know factually what I weigh today, and I know what my pants size are. And that stuff is important to me. As a 100-pounder, my weight was a manifestation of my disease. And the weight that I am today is a manifestation of my recovery. And so for me, as a 100-pounder, I have to be honest about that stuff. I have to be honest about what I eat. I have to be accountable about what I eat. I share it every day with my sponsor. I have to be accountable about what I do in the program with other people. I really owe my recovery to the practice of the 12 steps, the way that they're outlined in the Big Book of Alcoholics Anonymous. For me, that is the answer. The challenge for me is letting other people find their own answers, you know, and not thinking I've got the lockdown on truth. It's just my truth. It's my truth. The truth for me is that I could not stop compulsively overeating. And the truth for me is that the harder I tried to stop, the worse it got. The harder I tried to control, the more out of control I got. The more I tried to binge, the more I tried to diet, the worse the binging became. That's my truth. And the truth for me is that until I was really absolutely beaten, bloodied, and to my knees by this disease, I couldn't get to the point where I could change. And for me, what that looked like was the disease started affecting me medically. It wasn't about health. It wasn't about appearance for me or looks or, you know, being thinner. It was that the disease was killing me. And I was told by medical doctors that the disease was killing me, and that scared me. My father died absent both legs from complications of this disease. He died in kidney failure, in a coma without consciousness, and he was that way for quite a while. And that's scary to me. And he died relatively young. He died in his 60s, and I'm going to be 60 in 2 years. So that was scary to me. So it was fear that got me here. But fear alone wouldn't be enough to keep me abstinent. I had to have a power bigger than me to keep me abstinent. And I think my first connection with that higher power was just saying, I can't do this alone, you know. And that's where it starts for me. That's where this program starts for me, is saying, I can't do it alone. And that was like the hardest thing in the world for me, because I'm a person who thinks I can do everything on my own. You know, self-sufficiency was really it for me. Self-sufficiency was my answer. And self-sufficiency failed me utterly when it came to the food. And the program helped me see that self-sufficiency was failing me utterly in other areas of my life. So when I came in here, I was really surrendered And sometimes people say, well, what does that look like? And for me, surrender looked like doing what I was told, because I was not a person who did what I was told in life ever. My report cards in school were always like, needs to respect authority, you know, that kind of stuff. I don't know what they say now, but they were always like, you know, has difficulty following directions, stay in her seat, whatever, you know. I mean, I dropped out of high school. I left home at 16, you know, defiant. I've been on my own since I was 16 years old. So doing what I was told was really, really, really foreign to me. And that's what surrender looked like for me, was doing what I was told. You guys said get a sponsor. I didn't want to get a sponsor, but I got a sponsor. You guys said go to meetings. I didn't want to go to meetings. I hated meetings, you know. I didn't feel, people say I felt like I came home. You know, people say that, oh, like they came into the room. I didn't feel that. I was like, you know, I felt like I'm the only black person in the rooms. I know this stuff isn't true, but that's how I felt. I felt like I was the only lesbian in the room. I felt like I was the only person that needed to lose 150 pounds. That was my perception, and I did not want to go to meetings. But you guys said, if you want to get better, go to meetings. And so I went to meetings. And over and over and over I heard, if you want to get better, work the 12 steps. I didn't want to work the 12 steps. The thought of amends and inventory and sitting still and being quiet in meditation and, you know, all of that stuff was really abhorrent to me. I didn't want to do any of it. But you guys said if I wanted to get better, I had to do it. And for me, surrender looks like doing what you're directed to do by people who had what I wanted. You know, people stood up and said, I ate like you ate, and I did what this program suggests that we do, and I got better. And so, you know, the gift is that, for me, it's that gift of desperation, you know, G-O-D, God, gift of desperation. I was desperate. And I did what I was told, and it got better. It got better. And today I have a sane and a sober relationship with food. Today I'm in a normal body weight. And today I really do that thing about seeing. I really see myself more clearly today, and that's an ongoing process, but I really, really see myself clearer. I see other people more clearly with compassion and tolerance for other people, and I really feel more trusting today that there really is something greater than me, greater than the food, and then I don't have to run the show. I really feel that today. And I really believe today that if I continue to do what I'm doing, everything will be okay. Everything won't be perfect, but everything will be okay. I'll be taken care of, whatever comes. So thanks for letting me share.
Our next speaker is David.
I am David. I'm a compulsive overeater, bulimic.
Hi, David.
Thank you, Marcy. And if you heard me last night, I'm going to have a completely different story today. Just kidding. Just to qualify, I've been abstinent for 3 years and 2 months. My abstinence is no binging, no purging, no flour, no sugar. I eat 3 meals a day with nothing in between except for life. And I do make my abstinence the most important thing in my life without exception. And you know, it's so appropriate for me that this is the topic, because I came into OA without a God. I hated God when I came into OA. I used to tell my sponsor, don't tell me there's a God unless you've been through what I've been through. You know, when I came into OA, I tried to kill myself twice before I was 21. I was failing out of college. I'd been to 5 colleges in 4 years. I was going through 20,000 calories every single day. 15 diet pills of hydroxycut every day. I take 15 pills of hydroxycut, and then I drink half a bottle of NyQuil at night just so I could sleep for like 3 hours. I had no friends. I had never been in a relationship. I had, you know, no future, no career. My family, I hadn't spoken to my dad in 10 years. I hated everyone. I hated God, and I hated myself. So every single time people talked about God, I said, don't tell me there's a God unless you've been through what I've been through. You know, I come from a very alcoholic, abusive household. I always say the first memory I have of childhood, my dad used to shove my older sister up against the wall by her chins and just call her a fat effing pig. And I would jump on his back like 4 years old, just trying to pry him off her. And he'd take me by the shirt and throw me up against the wall. And I would look across the hallway at my mom and just beg for her and scream for her to help us. And she'd go into her meditation room and close the door. So why am I going to believe in a God if I don't even have parents who are going to protect me? Don't tell me there's a God. I'd been sexually molested. I was abused by my dad. I slept with a baseball bat under my bed until I was 14 years old. I was the fat kid in school. I was 60 pounds overweight. People would do the circle of fear on the playground around me, circle around me and throw pebbles at me and call me all the names. Chunk, baby beluga, pudgy, you know, fatso. I had every single name. I had no friends. You know, I had nobody. So thank God for the food. The food was my God. You know, thank God that the food was there because the food protected me. The food loved me. The food didn't stuff me into garbage cans. The food didn't call me fat. But eventually the food stopped working and the food turned on me. You know, so I would go to the food and I'd go to the food and I'd go to the food. And then by the time I was a senior in college, I was also messing with bulimia. I would throw up 5 times a day. My whole life became about, you know, how am I going to get more food or how am I going to get rid of it? I was always thinking about me. I was never thinking about anyone else. And, you know, when I came into OA, I got a sponsor and we started working the steps. And I started hearing other people talk about God. And, you know, I just wanted to get abstinent. I just wanted to lose weight and I just wanted to stop eating compulsively. I didn't want to think about God. And I had a sponsor who said, you know, you don't even have to believe in God, but just pray to something that's not yourself. You know, and it starts with the food because we're in here because the food, because it's not about the food, but when we come in, it's only about the food. You know, so the first part of step one, I got to get clear on that first, even before I start working the steps. You know, I got to get abstinent. You know, so I bring a power, whatever it is, I don't even have to believe in it. You know, studies show you don't even have to believe in what you're praying. It still works. God, I'll call it that just for today. God, can you help me eat 3 meals a day and stay abstinent, you know? And I did that for about 10 months. I would just pray and pray and pray. I wouldn't believe it. And then eventually, you know, the food obsession was just completely lifted from me. You know, the need to eat flour and sugar were just taken from me. And I saw that it really does work if you work it. So I started bringing this power into other areas of my life. And I think I want to talk about my family because when I came in, can I curse on this thing? Whatever. I fucking hated my dad when I came into this room. You know, I hadn't spoken to him in 10 years. I used to fantasize about murdering him. Literally, I would fantasize about going to his house with a scalpel and just cutting out his Adam's apple and eating it. Like, I'm crazy. I'm crazy. And I would fantasize about it. And, you know, my sponsor would say, like, you know, resentments or what are eating you, you know, blah, 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 blah. You got to get rid of it or else you're going to eat over it. So you got to start praying for your dad. And I knew that the prayer thing worked, you know, so I started, you know, I would get down on my knees and it was just a complete block. I can't pray for my dad. I'm not going to do it. And, you know, my sponsor would say, then at least pray for the willingness to pray. So for about 10 months, just I would pray for the willingness. God, can you just help me be willing to pray for my dad today? And I still couldn't do it, but I would do it, and I would do it, and I would do it. And then one day, I just got down on my knees, and the block lifted, and I was like, God, can you just, you know, there's the resentment prayer in the back of the big book. Can you help my dad have everything that I've been given? Can you treat my dad today? Can you be with my dad today? Can you give my dad some love today? And I would do that for about 10 months, and I kept praying, and then I started meaning it, like literally my heart. Like when I came into OA, my heart, there was ice around it, and nobody was coming in, and then my heart just cracked open, and light started coming through, and I started really meaning what I was saying and what I was praying. God, can you please be with my dad today? God, can you help me love my dad today? God, can you help my dad love himself today? And about a year and a half ago, I hadn't seen my dad in 10 years. I flew back to New York and, you know, I made amends to him. And I didn't know how it was going to go. I was just like, God, can you be with me? Can you help me not murder him when I see him? And, you know, I saw him and I had love in my heart for him and I really did forgive him. And I said, Dad, you know, I cut you out of my life for 10 years. And that's a pattern I do in my relationships, and I want to make it up to you, so what can I do? And he said, well, I'd like to start having a relationship with you. And I said, well, we can start having a phone relationship. And he said, oh, you talk to people on the phone? I said, yeah. And he said, then I can call you. And I said, well, Dad, it doesn't have to be a one-way street. I can call you, too. And for the past year and a half, every 10 days, my living amends to my dad is I've called him, and that's been a choice, and that's something that I want to do. And that is God working in my life. And, you know, in December, I flew back to New York, and I stayed with my dad for a week, for 4 days, which my sponsor thought I was crazy. And I stayed with him for 4 days, and he's still out of his mind. He's a 350-pound compulsive overeater, control freak. And I was just praying for him the whole time. Just, God, can you be with him? God, can you be with him? God, can you help me love him? And then on the second to last day, I needed a meeting, and my dad was like, I'll take you, because I didn't have a car. And he came into the meeting with me, and it was this huge meeting in Westchester. And we're all circled around, and my dad raises his hand to share, and I'm like, oh, shit, what is he going to say? Is he lying? And he breaks down in tears about being a compulsive overeater and how he's been in denial his whole life and how he needs help. And people were hugging him after, and he got a newcomer's packet. And that night, you know, I saw him on the couch with a newcomer's packet. I was like, this is just so surreal. And then I went to New York City, and I spent a couple of days with my sister, who's now obese. She's been in and out of rooms for 10 years. Came in because anorexic, was hospitalized, and now she's obese. And I was just, like, loving on her, and I was praying for her. And then she came to a meeting with me, and I had a friend there in New York, and my sister asked that friend to sponsor her. And my sister called me when I got back to L.A., and she was just like, your presence alone helped me want to go back to O.A. And my dad texted me a similar thing, and it's like, God is experiential for me. You know, I can't intellectualize this thing, but that is God. When I come into O.A. hating God, hating my dad, and hating myself, and just through the power of prayer, I come to a place where I can love my dad and I can truly love myself today. That is a power greater than myself working in my life. And if it can work with the food and if it can work with my dad, it can work with every single area of my life. I came in, I was failing out of college. God, can you help me, like, show me what I'm supposed to do with my career? I got into grad school at UCLA. I flew out to LA, not knowing anyone out here, moved to LA, went to school every single day. I didn't know how to go to school. God, can you help me set an alarm clock today? God, can you help me go to class today? God, can you help me raise my hand when I have something to say today? God, can you inspire me with, you know, homework today? God, can you write through me? And I graduated from UCLA with a 4.0, like from MFA in screenwriting. Like, that is God in my life today. And now I'm, like, in a job following my art. Like, it's just like my life is truly beyond. And I can honestly say that 10 minutes don't go by in my life today where I'm not talking to a power that's greater than myself. Literally, I came in without a God. Fuck God. And today, I'm just in love with a power that's greater than myself. And I connect with that power through service. I'm a dedicated service in and out of the rooms. I have 8 sponsees. I'm constantly of service. I make probably 10 to 15 outreach calls a day. I work 12 to 14 hour days. I'm up at 5 in the morning making outreach calls. I go to meetings. I've started meetings. And man, I just practice these principles in all my affairs. It's not about what I say up here. It's what I do out there. You know, how am I treating that lady at Coffee Bean? How am I loving other people? How am I going up to that person and saying, what's the best part of your day today? And for me, that's God. You know, for me is when I'm out of myself. Ego is edging God out. So when I get out of myself and when I start thinking about other people, I really do feel the power of God in my life. And my life today, you know, I owe my whole entire life to OA and to a higher power my whole life. I wouldn't trade this life for the world. I wouldn't trade being a compulsive overeater for the world. This, you know, this way of life is just awesome. And I'm a baby, you know, 3 years and a couple months. I'm just getting started. I am so excited for where I'm going. But I'm so content with where I'm at. So thank you.
Our next speaker is Katie B.
Hi, I'm Katie. I'm a compulsive overeater and bulimic. And thank you so much to the other two speakers. Marcy, I heard you when I was new, and just such an example of working a great spiritual program. And David, I've just feel like I've grown up in these rooms with you, and it's awesome. You know, we have a lot of fun, and life isn't boring just because we're in recovery, and I always say that. You know, I came in when I was 19 years old. I'm also sober, and I share that from the podium because it's just part of my story. It's hard to share one without the other for me. And I have a really amazing, full, fun life. And, you know, I want to stick to this topic, but just to qualify, my abstinence date's July 31st, 2009. I have a sponsor who knows that she's my sponsor because I call her and I talk to her every day. And when I don't call her every day, she calls me and calls me out on it. And that happened this week. I was sick for a couple of days and I got a call from my sponsor who I love. You know, and it's just so important to me to have someone that shines a light on my disease when I do not see that that's my disease. Because it is cunning, you know, it sneaks in little ways, and it's so important. And, you know, this disease took me out really young. And, you know, I used to, when I first came into program, I did a lot of thinking about, like, was I born with this, or was it my environment, or why did I eat? And, like, what I kind of have come to a realization now is it doesn't matter. You know, I'm here, I know that there's a solution, and I don't want to, I don't really have the desire to figure it out, you know. But at 19 years old, I didn't want to kill myself because I didn't have the guts to do that. But I was just felt like I lived in this slow, horrible place where time was just passing me by. And I was, you know, and had just graduated from high school and should be young and full of energy and living my life. And all I wanted to do was binge and purge, you know, like that was it. And eventually I stopped purging. It was just binging. And that's what brought me into these rooms. My mom 12-stepped me into Overeaters Anonymous, and she was, you know, she found the program later on. She's now almost a year abstinent, and I really didn't want to be here, you know. Like, I came in, I didn't see anyone that was my age. I felt like I didn't feel like that at-home feeling, you know. I felt like I didn't want to be here, but I just kept showing up. And that's how I know that God works in my life. Like, when I do not want to be somewhere, I'm angry. I don't see any similarities. I can't hear anything but the differences. And I just go to the next meeting, you know. Like, I know that that's how God works for me. And my journey, my spiritual journey is what I really want to share about and focus on. I grew up Catholic. I grew up here in Los Angeles. You know, I used to think that I had to make up this, like, horrible Catholic experience to belong in the rooms. And the truth is, I had a great experience, you know. I loved the parish I was at. The priest was awesome and very open. And I had a really good experience. It wasn't anything traumatic. And for me, that's how my disease shows up, is I want to make everything way more dramatic than it really is, you know. And it's... I mean, I've gone through a lot of trials and tribulations, but, you know, my life is not horrible. I grew up, I never wanted for anything. I had a really blessed life. But I always wanted to create a story and, like, would dream about writing an autobiography one day about how horrible my life was. And it was not like that. And so I grew up in the church. But at the same time, I grew up in a very alcoholic family, kind of loving alcoholic family, but alcoholic. And so I would go to church and I would just get on my knees, which we were taught to do. And my parents would drop the kids off at church because they were drinking or gambling or doing whatever they were doing. And we would go into church, and it was very important to me that we looked the part. You know, my parents never told me, like, we need to look great. I took that on. And so I made sure that we looked really good. You know, we didn't have our parents there, but I wanted to make sure we looked like the Kennedys or something, you know, like, and I would pray, and I would just, I always had that discomfort that we have as compulsive overeaters. Like, I never felt okay. I never felt like I could breathe. And I eventually kind of stopped going to church. And I, you know, church is not, like, you do not need to go to church. You know, you do not need to believe in a traditional God. That's just was the beginning of my path. And I moved up to school in San Francisco, and I was very active in all of my diseases. I was there to go to school, and I kind of forgot that, you know. I was binging and purging and drinking and doing drugs and shopping and having a lot of sex. And I was just, like, all of my diseases in one. And I took 3 buses to go up to this kind of spiritual center in San Francisco, and I went there, and I just started crying, and I was 18 or 19 at the time, and I was just like, God help me, you know, like, I don't know what's wrong with me, and I've been going to therapy since I was pretty little, because my parents really didn't know what to do with me, you know. I was like this hyper-vigilant kind of crazy kid, and very social, but just, it was obvious that something was off with me, and so I didn't know what was wrong with me, and as speakers have shared over this weekend, for me, that is the best place to be, like, God, just help me. I don't know what's going on. I don't know what's wrong, but, like, I'm in so much pain, and for the first few years of my program, like, my, I say it worked a food plan, you know, like, I was abstinent, and I was active in the fellowship, but my spiritual life wasn't, I wasn't active, you know, and what happened for me was that I was taking a candle for 3 years, and I felt like I was in just another prison. You know, I wasn't in the food. I had lost 95 pounds, but I was just, like, in pain, you know, and again, I asked God to help me, and I was directed to a new sponsor who is so spiritually centered, and she has long-time abstinence. You know, she's abstinent for 26 years, and she has what I want, and I just started doing what she told me to do, and my life started to grow. And last July, in 2012, I started having the hardest time of my life, and it was horribly painful for a year and a half. One thing after another, you know, it started with a woman who was like a mother to me, died really suddenly in Europe. She fell down a flight of stairs, died after being in a coma for 6 days. I lost a friend that I grew up with to cancer when she was 22 years old. My best friend in the world committed suicide. And I got diagnosed with this really rare eye disease that I have now, where I'm legally blind. It's called retinitis pigmentosa, and there's no cure and no treatment. So I was like, okay, God, like, you know, and I just started seeking, you know. I started praying more. I could not sit still, and my sponsor had a very similar experience, and she just taught me to pray, and I didn't have to believe that it was going to work, and I didn't pray for the outcome. I prayed for, God, just help me stay in my life and stay present and stay abstinent and stay here. And I started seeking more, you know, and my world opened up. And today I do a lot. I have a big morning routine. Like, it has grown over the years. And for me, it's what centers me. It's what grounds me. I'm the happiest I've ever been in my life, you know. And my sponsor has said, you know, happiness is something that, it's a feeling. It's not something you're supposed to be all the time. Like, that's something that we make up, is I'm supposed to be happy all the time. But the program, the steps, having a God of my understanding and a spiritual life helps me to feel comfortable. So even when I'm having a hard time, I feel, for the most part, peace and comfort and love, and my heart has completely opened up, and it's an amazing, amazing life. And this program is to get us to start on a spiritual experience. So, like, I go to program, but I also, you know, I go to yoga, and I meditate, and I go to different spiritual religious places, and I'm always seeking and reading, and Deepak Chopra, you know what I mean? Like, I am always seeking and reading and experiencing, and I think that that is what, for me, gives me the most kind of joy and happiness. You know, it's not just our lives get bigger when we get here. And I'll wrap up with this. Like, we never know how our experiences will benefit others. I got this new sponsor, had no idea why I was drawn to this woman, but I was. And I've learned in here to listen to that voice. And, like, she literally had an experience with losing her sight. Like, what are the chances? We went to the same place, the same doctors, all that stuff. And she has, like, when I look at her, she's the woman that I want to be like, you know. And I haven't really had that. And you know, part of my grieving with losing my sight was I worked in fashion. And I was like, how am I supposed, like, this is my love, this is my passion. Like, I was always about art and culture and fashion and style, like, all this stuff. And that was what I loved ever since I was really little. And how am I supposed to do this? And, like, I was just, and I share this because it's such a miracle, I was just approached by this woman who has seen me for years working and doing all this stuff, and who wants, like, she wants to collaborate with me. And she was like, I will be the eyes, you be the creative force, you know. And it's like, the industry I work in is not like, we don't really help people, you know, like we're not like altruistic, like all that, you know. It's very, so it's amazing to me that someone in that industry was like this program bypasses all lines, you know. And it's just amazing. If you're new and you're here, this program works. There's always hope in OA. You know, I've gotten my life here. And you know, something that I hear on a daily basis is focus on the good grows for my sponsor, and focus on the bad grows, you know. And when I do that, I have a really good life. I write a gratitude list every single morning, and handwritten. And I have a really good life, and I don't need to focus on circumstances. I have a good life because I have a God who loves me and cares about me and wants the best for me. So that's how I try and behave in the world today. So thank you.
Thank you, Katie. Now we have time for some questions. The first question I'm going to read is actually directed towards David. And it says, David, what was your first higher power, and is it the same or has it changed?
What do I speak to?
Yeah, speak to that. Yeah, it's being recorded that way.
Hi, I'm David. I'm compulsive overeater, bulimic.
Hey, David.
So when I came into the rooms, I had no feelings other than fat and numb. And when I came into OA, like, the actual, I felt a power when I left the rooms. I binged over it because the power was so overwhelming. But that power, it took me a year and a half to get abstinent. That power is what got me abstinent. That was my first initial higher power. And that's what stayed with me. And then my higher power grew by my experiences. That feeling that I used to get after turning over every step, I would feel like this immense power, and that became more of my higher power. And then when the feeling where the food obsession was completely lifted, that became my higher power. So my higher power today is just a whole bucket of experiences that prove to me that there is a power greater than myself. You know, making amends to my dad, getting through grad school, getting a job offer, like, out of nowhere. That's all God. Like, all of those things add to my God. And my God today is huge. The bigger my life gets, the bigger my God gets. Because I know, you know, there's that quote, the greatest way to miss the miracles is to take credit and turn them into accomplishments. I know today that everything good in my life is a result of having a higher power. Every single thing, my relationship, my family relationships, my job, my work, like, everything is because of God, because it came in with nothing. So my higher power today is just, like, everything good. It's love. It's everything. And the whole thing is, I don't need to know what God looks like. I know what it feels like when I'm connected.
Okay. Thank you, David. Here's a question for the panel. Do you ever feel fear when things are going well? And if so, how do you get beyond it so that it doesn't bring misery?
I totally relate to that question, because when I had things going really well and things were really calm, I was always waiting for the other shoe to drop. You know, like, when is it going to get bad? And meditation helped me a lot to quiet down and to just be where my feet are, you know, like, okay, things might turn out really bad, but right now they're not and they're good, and how can I enjoy it and how can I enjoy my life? Because, you know, if I'm taking it one day at a time, I can't be in what's going to happen tomorrow and a week and a year and 5 years and 10 years, because I'm totally missing out on today. So where am I at right now? And that has helped me a lot. And it's so weird, and it's very 2014 of me to say, but there's this app on the iPhone called The Now that sends you these notifications about being present, and I swear to God it helps, you know, because it's this loud, obnoxious ring, and it helps me to stay like, oh, okay, right now at 3 o'clock in the afternoon, where am I? So.
Okay, that's fine. Here's a question. Okay, thank you. Thank you, Katie. This is for the panel. How do you help a sponsee they can't look beyond the pain?
I'm Marcy. I'm a grateful compulsive overeater, and my sponsee is laughing hysterically. So, you know, I don't know. The best thing I can do, I think, is to just tell what happened to me, you know, to share my experience. And that's what I really try to remember. I sponsor a lot of people, and it's easy to get into some kind of guru mode or, you know, thinking you've got the answers and telling people what to do. But what I know from studying the Big Book is that the Big Book says that we share what happened to us. We don't tell people what to do. We share exactly what happened to us. And so I try to remember to practice that and just share my own experience. You know, my experience that things get better with abstinence and that the food is not going to make anything better and, in fact, will make things worse. To share that the answers for me were found in really practicing the program of recovery. And that hold on and things will get better, you know. So that's the best thing that I can do is share what happened to me, share what I did, and give support and comfort. I try to stay really connected with the people I sponsor. I feel like it's like an agreement. Like people say, oh, my sponsor fired me or something. I don't see it like that. Like I don't see it as a contractual, like, firing and hiring, but it's an agreement we have. It's a relationship that we have that I agree to sponsor, and I am willing to sponsor, and you are willing to be sponsored, and that it's a love thing, you know. It's a love thing, and it's an honesty thing. It's not like a grading or judgment thing.
Here's another question for the whole panel. I left when I got so involved with my life that this program gave me back. How do you balance the program with so much life?
I'll share. I have sponsees who literally all the time say there's not enough time. And I literally work 12 to 14-hour days. I'm in a really competitive field. There's enough time. If I can put my program first just today, somehow there's time. I don't need to sleep 10 hours a day anymore. I literally probably sleep 3 hours a night, 4 hours a night. By putting other people first, I have a supernatural energy. I just got to stop thinking about myself. When I'm thinking about myself, that's when there's not enough time. There's so much time in real estate wasted thinking about me every day. If I can get out of myself just a little bit, it's just beyond how much time I have to live and to help other people. Just beyond. So there's enough time by going to meetings. When I go to meetings, there's enough time. When I put other people, when I make those outreach calls, I get more time to live my life. I don't know how that works. It's weird. It's kind of like counterintuitive, but it works. So
to kind of just echo what David said, my experience has been, and I sponsor a lot of people. I can't work right now because of this eye disease, but I was working 60-hour weeks. and my experience has been that time expands. You know, like when I'm in the solution and when I am putting program first and my recovery first and how can I help people and answering the phone when it rings, doing all the things that we're taught, that somehow time creates itself. You know, somehow it works out. And I go to a lot of meetings. I'm in two programs. I have sponsees. Like, I live this program, but I also go out dancing with girlfriends and go to shows and live a fun life. And time just kind of creates itself, you know? And when I take a minute to slow down and then to be of service, it somehow all works out. I can't worry about it. And for me, just kind of a practical thing, I was taught to get a planner when I got in a program and write out my meetings, like, as part of my schedule on the same level as a work schedule. So I wouldn't just not go to work because I don't have the time. You know, I figure it out. I make this program and my meetings just as important. It's not negotiable or optional. And that has really held me in good stead.
So as the 58-year-old grandmother of four, parent of three, their energy is amazing to me, and I really honor that. For me, the challenge is finding balance. You know, as I get older, my energy does lag, and I do get tired, and I have had to learn to say no. I have had to learn to set some boundaries around time and what I am really able to do. Always putting program first, program and abstinence is first for me, but learning to say, you know, I can't do everything, and that there are other people who can also do, you know, learning that balance and praying. Really, it's been a challenge praying for balance and not overextending myself. So I don't know if that helps with it.
Thank you. Here's another question for the whole panel. Can you please describe how you maintain your conscious contact with God each day?
I have to do it in the morning because I find that if I don't do it in the morning, I just won't do it. So I was taught to literally roll off of my bed, get on my knees, say a prayer. When I first came in, my prayer was, please help keep me abstinent today. It doesn't have to be a long thing. And I was also told that, you know, we speak the language of the heart, so I don't need to say any really formal, long, crazy prayer. I get honest with my higher power. And then it's developed over the last couple of years. So what I do today is I have three daily readers that I read out of. I handwrite a gratitude list. I can't type because there's a disconnect for me. I have to actually write. And so I write a gratitude list. I meditate for 10 minutes. I call my sponsor. I start answering my sponsee's calls. And then it says pause when agitated or doubtful. So throughout the day, I pause. But in the morning, I found for me that is extremely helpful. If I start my day like that, if I start my day just off and running, I'm immediately in crazy land. So I have to start it with a pause.
There was a time in recovery where I would set my timer every morning and do the meditation and light the candles, write a letter to God, and then God would write a letter back to me, and it was like so ideal and perfect, and I was just trying to get the A from my sponsor. I can't do that anymore today. Literally, doing the best I can. I wake up, I exercise probably first thing in the morning just to clear my head. I usually run around the Silver Lake Reservoir without headphones, and that's my prayer time, just talking to God for 40 minutes. Or I go to yoga, which is I'm just connecting. And then for me, it's like I connect through tangible action. So I exercise and I pray, and then I make outreach calls. That's like how I connect usually.
I think I connect best remembering what the big book says, that upon awakening, I try to connect. When I retire at night, I make a conscious effort to connect. And then also all throughout the day, you know, you guys really are gave me, you know, perfect. I just really did everything they said. And just the only thing I would add is that a really important time for me to try to make a conscious contact is before I eat. So since really early in program, I learned a prayer that to just say, God, thank you for coming between me and this food so that the food doesn't come between me and you, and to really take time to connect with God before I eat. So at least I'm getting in three times a day, you know.
Here's another question for the whole panel. What keeps you from giving up when you're at the end of your rope?
Experience is knowing that when I'm at the end of my rope, usually right before jumping off, there's like a new rope, which like leads to something a lot greater. And it's like really pain really is the touchstone of spiritual growth. Looking back over my life, every painful thing that ever happened to me led to like tremendous healing and joy. So I just have to go back to that. Like the worst of the worst have led me to the top of the mountain. So I try to like accept the worst when I'm in it.
Something like I shared that has helped me is having smart feet over the last while and just showing up when I don't want to show up. And it doesn't really matter. My attitude doesn't matter. You know, my actions matter. So I can be really pissed. I'm going to a meeting, but I'm at the meeting. And also something that my sponsor shares is that all things pass. You know, pain has a beginning, a middle, and an end. But if I, you know, divert and try and get through it in another way, whether it's the food or anything else, it's just like going to come back around in a different form. And that, you know, really experience that my most painful times, my most painful experiences are the things that help me and help others, you know. And it talks about it, that the dark crevices of our soul are the things that give other people light. And I think that is huge, you know, and it all passes, really, because that's what and when I'm in pain like that, I just need a simple thing, like it will pass. It might not be today or in a month or even in a year, but it'll eventually pass.
Okay, here's one last one. We have a few minutes left. To the whole panel, how has God shown you that you are worthy of self-love and not self-loathing? How has God shown you that you are worthy of self-love and not self-loathing?
I would say for me, practicing the program, that's probably my answer for everything, but practicing the program the way it is outlined in the big book has really led me to a place where I am much more able to love myself. And it's still really, really challenging. There was a guy named Carl when I first came in program. Some of you guys may remember him. And he would say to stand in front of the mirror naked. He passed away. But he would say, stand in front of the mirror naked and say, I love you. And I just could not do it. It was like impossible. That was the hardest thing in the world, to just extend love to myself. And by really just practicing, you know, really inventorying and daily prayer and meditation, 6 and 7 are immeasurably helpful for me in identifying that defect, because it really is a defect. I can be much more loving and compassionate to other people than I am to myself, you know. And so just really practicing the program has helped me so much with just extending the same love to myself, to my sick self, that I would to my, you know, my sick friends and fellows.
Yeah, practicing the principles of the program, I came in thinking I was just like the filthiest, fattest, most disgusting scum of the earth. And, you know, my sponsor used to say we build self-esteem by doing esteemable acts. So I would come, I'd be the first one in meetings, I would set up chairs, I would do service commitments, speaking at meetings. Like, practicing all those principles give me self-esteem. And it's like I learn how to live out there by living in OA. OA teaches me how to live. You know, I be of service. I give to others. And that makes me feel like I'm worthy of love.
It's interesting. I definitely had self-loathing when I came in, but I actually reached my bottom with self-loathing in the rooms. And what happened for me, like I shared, was when I was just following a food plan, I reached this point where I was abstinent and really active in the program and completely terrified of food, and to the point where I thought I needed to give up beets because I liked them, you know? I was so scared of, like, and I just had such self-loathing while abstinent. And for me, and the way it presented itself was I was really angry in the rooms, and I would share from the podium and be like, it doesn't matter how you behave as long as you're abstinent, and, like, you can yell at people all day long, and I would call people out in the meetings, and I was just, like, nasty. And for me, I learn when I'm in enough pain, and that's my selfishness as an addict. And so I saw how much pain my own self-loathing was causing me, and I said to myself, well, why don't we just pretend that you actually love yourself and you love everyone in this room, and let's see how that looks. And when I did that, my behavior changed, and then the way I felt changed. For me, the way that I feel is kind of the last thing to happen. And so the way I felt changed, and then I don't talk bad about myself today. Like, I love myself. I love other people. It's kind of when that ice around your heart starts melting, and the way I see the world changes, and then the way I see myself changes. And I'm much more effective as a human being if I'm coming from a place of love, whether it's self-love or loving you, than coming from hate and anger and resentment. And it's just not, it just doesn't work. So that's been my experience.
Okay. That is all the time we have for questions. Please help me thank our speakers, Marcy, David, and Katie B, for sharing their strength and hope with us today. After a moment of silence, please stand where you are and join hands as we say the Serenity Prayer.
If you work in, you're worth it.